baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
Wire and another one. My goodness.
Good morning, sir. How goes it? Look at us both in Edmonton, eh?
I know. This is weird. I woke up this morning to the sound of some pretty aggressive wind, and I was thinking maybe a snowstorm was going to be rolling in, but when I checked my trusty weather app, it said not till Monday, so...
Oh, thank goodness. So I was up in Grand Prairie. I did the casino show there on Wednesday. And tonight I'm going to that Canada-Costa Rica soccer game at Commonwealth Stadium.
Have fun with that.
Buddy, it is going to be cold, and I am so glad the snowstorm is waiting.
No kidding.
Wow. How's your last few days been, buddy?
It's been good. I was kind of out of it the last, I don't know, just kind of got swamped over the weekend with just like family stuff, and I was assigned to do all the Christmas decorations, so we have our... have our tree up now and everything like that.
Oh, now that Remembrance Day is over, you
No. We did that long before Remembrance Day. I think November 4th we put them up. So it would have been November 1st, the day after Halloween, but my wife was working, so I got away with it. But we live in a very diverse neighborhood, shall we say. So there was a lot of people in the neighborhood who celebrate Diwali, which is... So there's a lot of Christmas lights going up for the Diwali celebrations. So
right.
That was November 4th. So at that point, my wife was not tolerating any more delays. Decorations went up. So, but and I've decorated my office too. I've got all my Christmas-themed Funko Pops behind me. There's a Yoda in a Santa suit, Darth Vader with a candy cane lightsaber. I've got Spider-Man in a Christmas sweater, and the Joker dressed up like Santa. So, I mean, I'm ready now.
Looking good.
Anyways.
Looking good.
Should we talk ball?
Yeah, let's do it. Welcome to the walk-off, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate the listenership. Obviously, you can do so wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're watching us on YouTube right now, well, you already know what you're doing here, obviously. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. We've got all sorts of stuff to talk about today. The GM meetings, we'll delve into that, and the fact that some news just dropped from Jeff Passan that it looks like this free agent class may be getting some signed players sooner than we originally thought. Lots of hardware handed out in the last few days, and the Blue Jays recipients of that. We'll delve into that, and of course, we'll go over some trade candidates we could see leaving the Jays and some targets that could be coming back our way. You can follow us at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, the Walk Off Podcast on Instagram, and on TikTok. We also... we've been low on guests, and I will just say this. Normally, we've been doing about a guest a week, and I know that since the ball season ended, we haven't had much on the go. Very thankful to talk to our buddy from the UK there, Steve. We obviously had Craig Ballard on from Jays Talk, but as we're talking to some of these minor league Jays players and stuff like we've been doing all season long, I think that now that the season ended, they were just kind of like... they're seeing our messages, but they haven't responded. I think they're taking a month off, but hopefully we start getting ball players and stuff like that.
They're getting some much needed reps in on the golf course right now. So
exactly. They do love their golf, those Jays prospects. Absolutely. And I did wish to bring up too that if you did have a favorite New Hampshire Fisher Cat or someone in the Buffalo Bison system that you would like to hear us ask questions to and pick their brain and talk some ball with, feel free to drop us a line and let us know who you're looking to see on the show. You can do so by obviously messaging us on Twitter or Instagram. And we've also got our Discord open. It's free to everyone, and you can kind of go in there and let us know what you're thinking. Shall we get into this?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. GM meetings happened this week, and normally this is just a formality, especially over the last couple of years. It's nothing really happens until the winter meetings, and really the last few years with the pandemic and so on and so forth, even 2019, the market was really slow played and nothing really happened until late December or even into the new year. But it's looking like, and we predicted that would be the same this year because of the CBA and its expiration date ending on December 1st, and then it's all rumors and all signs are pointing that there's going to be a lockout come December 1st. But Jeff
Passan came... still doesn't mean much until February.
Exactly. It's all a show until February, pretty much, until spring training starts to lose games.
Yeah.
But Jeff Passan came out this morning and said that the free agent market is moving faster for certain players than expected. And a couple of the big free agents under Scott Boras's watch, both Marcus Semien and Corey Seager, a couple of the biggest shortstops available on the market currently. Semien, of course, the darling of Toronto. We Jays fans all love him. He played second base and can move around the infield. But the rumors are both of them are looking to sign major contracts before December 1st, so in the next week or two. And the reasoning for that is that it is predicted that once the lockout happens, there won't be any movement. And then once they figure out this CBA, all of a sudden there's going to be a frenzy of moves, and teams are a little worried. There are teams that are worried that they're going to get lost in the shuffle. And obviously that is a concern as a general manager that you would wish to take into consideration here. So it is going to be interesting to see where these chips land before December 1st.
Let's really just, I guess, kind of flash forward in our crystal ball, right? So we're talking about December 1st, officially, even though it won't mean much, the lockout begins, right? So there's a freeze on free agent signings, right? Nothing happens other than owners and the Players Association arguing. Flash forward, maybe we lose games, maybe we finally get to it in April, maybe we finally get to it in July, whatever the case may be. Still no free agency until that deal is signed.
Yes.
Then there's going to be like a week before games start.
It's going to be a mad dash. It's going to be insane.
So that's the flurry that these guys don't want to miss out on is There's going to be some panic teams, but there's going to be some panic players too, right? So definitely an advantage to signing early, especially for an older guy like Semien, right?
Absolutely.
Plus right now, I mean, coming off those two big awards, strike while the iron's hot and your name is in the news, right? Like,
yeah. And that is a very good point. Marcus Semien did just take home. He's got a gold glove last week. And of course, he won the Silver Slugger Award a couple days ago for second base. One of the best players in the league. I mean, he's
third in AL MVP voting too.
Absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I know Steven Matz is another guy, former Blue Jay. He's in free agency right now. Of course, there's all sorts of rumors about where he could be going. He's another domino that looks like it's going to fall before December 1st. The first domino to fall so far, we have had a free agent signing, and that is Andrew Heaney going to the Los Angeles Dodgers, kind of in the same idea as Robbie Ray to the Jays last year, right? He's making $8.5 million. Heaney is good stuff, bad control, and obviously the Dodgers are hoping that they can get something
figured out
of him. That, yeah. He didn't look very good with the Yankees, but we'll see what happens. out of curiosity, I know that you heard some caveats as to what the MLB is proposing in this new CBA, and it really piqued my interest here. Well, what are you hearing?
Okay, so first like crazy leak that I heard is that the MLB wants free agency to just start at 29 and a half years old.
So service time irrelevant.
Service time irrelevant. Maybe that's a factor in like arbitration years, but whether you are brought up as a 20-year-old or a 27-year-old, once you're 29 and a half years old, the next offseason you're a free agent. So I mean, that's great for guys who develop slowly, right? Think of like an Aaron Judge or a Josh Donaldson. Guys less excited about that news would be Vladdy and Bo. But I don't know. I mean, it's the kind of thing where like all the money in the pot is kind of just is what it is. They can't invent new money to spend on these guys. So it's just a shift of money from, you know, one category to another, right? Like,
right, because they're talking of raising the floor for the minimum salary than right. So delaying free agency.
Yeah, the league minimum right now is about
the same. Yeah,
is about 600,000. They want to move it. The players want it moved up to about $1 million per year. And like every club has like 10 of those guys on their team that they're just paying the league minimum. And, you know, so if you go from 600,000 to $1 million for all those guys, that's an extra $4 million that you're paying those guys. Well, that money has to come from somewhere. So it just means, you know, the next time you sign George Springer, you're signing him for $121 million instead of $125. Or I guess it will be an annual value instead. So my math is off there, but you get the idea.
I can't see the Players Association being excited about free agency starting at 29 and a half years.
No, not at all. Because
that's going to be a sticking point.
No, because it favors people who develop slowly.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of them, right?
Like, the game's getting younger.
The game is constantly getting younger. And I think that the players are going to want to have confidence in themselves that, like, no. The only reason we've been developing slowly is because you've been holding us back, right? You've been manipulating our service time and all this stuff, right? So just, anyways, that's one thing that I don't think is actually going to, nothing's going to come of that. The second thing that I thought was interesting was the owners want to just do away with arbitration. So right now, as it stands, your first 3 years in the league, you get the league minimum. That it just is what it is. And then years 4 through 6, you go to arbitration. So basically, with the help of an agent, you sit in front of a panel of 3 judges, you say, this is how much money I think I'm worth. And then the owner of your team says, I think they're worth this much. And then the arbitrators decide which one is more right. Owners don't want to do that anymore. And they just want it to be a formula. Just like, you know, draft picks are slotted a certain, you know, you're drafted first overall. This is how much you get.
How much is allotted through that slot, right?
Right. So they want to do that based on your WAR stat, which is wins above replacement, right? So they want to just be able to go, hey, Lourdes, you're a left fielder with a WAR of 2.3. So this is how much money you get next year. And that's it.
Right.
Right. There's
replacing
no negotiation.
The lawyers.
Replace the lawyers. Replace
with
the agents.
Spreadsheet.
The agents aren't going to like that, right? Because that's the big pitch that agents make to these guys is, hey, you know, for 10% of your blah, 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 I'll be there with you through arbitration and I'll help you get that sorted. I don't think anything's going to come of it, but it is nice to think that it would simplify things a lot. And I think, you know, it would potentially, you'd avoid some hurt feelings where the owner doesn't have to say, hey, Vladdy, I think you're only worth this much, right? Instead, it goes, hey, man, my hands are tied. Here's your $6 million contract. I think you're worth a lot more personally. You know, like, good job.
Honestly,
on all those awards this year, but
that is such a good point, Adam, that I had not really taken into consideration the whole hurt feelings idea of it. Like, Marcus Stroman, when he was with the Jays, they went through a really rough arbitration process, and he was really... like, he came out and publicly said it sucked. It was the worst because they literally are nickel and diming you and bringing up every insufficiency you have, every downfall in your play. And I think you're right, man. If you can just look at a spreadsheet and take the line of where, how many wins above replacement you are, and you go and follow it, that's your money. That's an interesting idea. And
I mean,
maybe players aren't going to fight that. Maybe players feel the same way, you know?
I mean, I like the idea. I don't know if it'll happen or not.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I mean, I don't know.
I think a lot of these little caveats too are all things that they're putting in there so that they can give concessions, you know what I mean?
Yes, like, of course.
So that they can be like, okay, we're going to negotiate. We're going to take some of this out. So I think that there is a little bit of posturing going on in some of these little tidbits being added to the CBA, but some good ideas in there too. I do like that idea of basing it off of WAR rather than sitting down with your lawyers and just like raking the player over the coals.
Well, it is kind of a crazy concept of, like, you know, let's say with Vladdy. Hey, Vladdy wants this much money. He thinks he's worth this much. He just won all these major awards. And then the ownership side comes in and goes, yeah, but he really freaking sucks.
Look
for
at these
defensive
reasons. Defensive metrics.
Yeah, which is, it's just a highlight reel of like the 6 errors that he made or whatever.
Yeah.
And then whatever a contract gets agreed to for the year, and now they're just going to be best buds again, and it's like, hey, yeah, welcome to the clubhouse. And it's like, I don't know, it's cringy.
It is going to be interesting to see what happens with this CBA, man, and to kind of go back here to the GM meetings. Scott Boris, of course, making all sorts of noise, being his regular self. Blue Jays fans, of course, will remember the 2019 free agency when he came out and said Toronto has the blue flu. They don't want to spend. They're just they're trying to lose games. And he came out and said something similar again this year, not about the Blue Jays, but he literally came out and said there's about 17 teams that are trying to win this year. Pretty much saying half the teams are tanking, which is probably generous. He's probably being generous. Tanking is a major problem right now in baseball, which is one of the reasons why I think they're trying to expand playoffs, right? Is to create a little bit more incentive for these ownership groups to go out and spend a little bit of money on free agency.
Yeah. Did you see... I thought this is the craziest part to me. The suggested remedy for tanking was, if you don't win whatever the threshold was for games, if you don't win at least 80 games, you lose a draft pick.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't get to pick in the first round. That'll never fly. But again, I think that's more of just I want to say something that's going to get headlines, and here we are talking about it. I'll be honest, man.
I do really dislike the fact that there are so many bad teams in baseball. And it is a problem.
Well, did you see...
I don't know what the solution is.
Did you see the criticism of the Atlanta Braves and how their World Series win was should have an asterisk next to it?
No. Who's saying that?
That was from Scott Boris as well, in that same speech about the about tanking, was that it's kind of BS that the Braves won the World Series because they just picked up scraps from other teams that were tanking. They're like, yeah. Basically the takeaway was, it's not fair that you should be able to spend money, build a good team in April, and then another team can just pick up scraps from people who are phoning it in and have the same chance at the end of the year as you. Which, I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, he is wrong, but I mean, you and I both play in fantasy leagues. Is there anything more frustrating in fantasy, whether it's fantasy baseball, fantasy hockey, fantasy football, whatever? Is there anything worse than seeing the team who's 1-8 trade away their best running back or their best whatever? And it's like, even if it is a fair trade in return, if you're one of the guys who just saw, you know, someone else that you're going to have to face in the playoffs bolster their lineup by basically robbing a guy who doesn't care about the season anymore because his year's over. Super, you're just like, oh, fuck you, Adam. How the fuck can you even think? Sorry, I'm getting worked up here. I'm 1-8 in fantasy football this year, so I've been getting a lot of trade offers from everybody, and I've just had to say, like, look, I'm going to do my best to set my lineup for the rest of the year, but none of my players will help anybody else win a championship. So that's my policy for the rest of the way. We're so off topic. Sorry, guys. Everybody who doesn't play fantasy sports is so annoyed. Let's go back to
Marcus Semien for just a second here, because I did find it very interesting to see that his name was one of the ones that were brought up by Jeff Passan that may get signed before December 1st and may jump the gun of a lot of these free agents in a very strong free agent class. And the one thing that really came to mind is that if that is the case, if Marcus Semien is one of these guys, I think Toronto could be a true destination for him unless one of these West Coast teams have blown him away. Like, we're pretty early on in free agency, and the Blue Jays have obviously offered him contracts throughout the season in 2021. They made him offers, and I think that they've got a pretty good idea of what he's after and who is going to spend where. So I think that unless Seattle is the team that maybe is out there to make a huge splash, there's not a lot of other teams that make a ton of sense on the West Coast. Yes, the Angels maybe, but the thing with the Angels is that if they continue to do what they're doing and they go out and get Marcus Semien and again ignore their pitching, we've already seen what happens. They've got two guys who could be an MVP candidate at any time in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. I think that their sights are set on pitching, and I think that the money that they do have, even though they are a very big market and do have a ton of clout when it comes to the bankroll that they can use, I can't see Simeon fitting in there. So really the best fit is Seattle and Toronto. And if Seattle outspends Toronto, I'll be a little choked, man. I don't know how you feel.
I don't know if I would say I would be choked. I keep going back to this with Toronto. I love Simeon. So glad he was here.
Yeah.
I'm willing to spend to keep him here on like a three-year deal. I'm willing to overspend on like a three-year deal. I'm not willing to do something that will even a little bit jeopardize our ability to sign Bo and Vladdy. And that's just kind of like it. That's where the conversation ends for me.
I don't think the front office would do that. I don't think that is a concern.
I don't know, once you start getting into 5-6 year deals, and if that's what he wants, right? Like if we're willing to give him 3 years, $30 million, whereas the Mariners are willing to give him, 6 years, $130 million. Like, I don't know. I don't want to get into a bidding war just for the sake of not losing him.
No, and I get that, and I totally get that. I really like Marcus Simeon, and I'd love to see him back in a Blue Jays uniform. I don't think that it's the be-all and end-all. I don't think that if the Jays lose out on Marcus, that this is a huge loss. Obviously, it is a loss, but I think that there are guys out there that, Toronto is a winning team right now. People wish to be a part of a winning team, and I think that there are guys out there who would love to come to Toronto. So I don't think that this is going to be do or die, but I think Marcus Simeon coming back would be huge for this team, and I think it would be huge for the kids on this team. And we're going to transition here into the awards all the Blue Jays have picked up in the last little bit here, starting with Marcus Simeon, who also just won the Silver Slugger Award along with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Teoscar Hernandez. And Teoscar Hernandez, now this is two Silver Slugger Awards back to back for him. Man, I gotta say, this Shapiro and Atkins regime has done some pretty solid moves, and they've really done an elite job, in my opinion, of identifying talent. But Teoscar's gotta be one of the top dudes that they've done that with. Like, man, trading Francisco Liriano in 2017 on an expiring contract to Houston to bolster their bullpen and even starting rotation for their run at a contention there.
Yep.
And to get Teoscar Hernandez out of that, who has just been the backbone of this team since 2019. It's incredibly impressive, man. They got a young, very controllable dude. Like, he's under contract until 2023. Like, he's arbitration eligible right now, and we'll see where he winds up landing. But, man, tip of the hat.
No, it's a great move, and I think you bring up something interesting with Teoscar. I mean, I know we're going to talk trade talks in a little bit. Is there any chance he gets traded? Is he a trade candidate in your mind?
No, but I don't know, man. It would really depend what's coming back. Like, that would be a pretty big blockbuster. That being said, I mean, we watched the Jays do the exact same thing back in 91 when they brought in Joe Carter and Roberto Alomar, right? Like, it was a pretty blockbuster trade that did that. So maybe there is a shakeup going on.
You know what? Let's hold off on trades for now. We got more awards to get to, and I know we're going to talk trades later.
Vladdy, while we're talking about him, he won the Hank Aaron Award, and that's for the top hitter in each league, and that's voted on by the media. And Vladdy taking the American League Award, and why wouldn't he? 48 home runs, .311 batting average,
incredible season,
111 RBIs, a .600 slugging percentage, OPS over 1,000. I mean, the guy was his coming out party this year, right?
Yep.
He turned out to be everything that he was hyped up to be, and he's bringing home the hardware to show it. So, pretty darn cool.
Pretty cool.
Okay, let's get into trades.
All right.
And we're going to break this into two categories. Let's go over, we're not going to give scenarios as to we would trade this guy for that guy or whatever like that, but we're going to go over the candidates that I think could be moved on the Blue Jays and then some targets that make the most sense going forward. And we're going to start with an area of strength, which is catching for the Toronto Blue Jays, obviously, especially with Gabriel Moreno. And we're going to talk Gabriel Moreno before we wrap this thing up here because he's just absolutely destroying the Arizona Fall League. But he is going to be one of the top prospects in baseball come the start of the spring, maybe even a top three guy, which does allow the Blue Jays a little breathing room when it comes to the three guys they're currently carrying on their lineup, which is Alejandro Kirk, Reese McGuire, and Danny Jansen. Now, Reese McGuire, he was kind of let go in the middle of April, I think it was, as they DFA'd him, and he cleared waivers, was sent down to AAA for the Jays, and when the Blue Jays experienced all those injuries to their catchers in May, he came up and he played very well. Slightly below average catcher. He's definitely a backup guy. However, he is a left-handed hitter. He calls a good game behind the plate, and he seems to get along with all the catchers. So that is an option that I don't see them getting a lot for him, but it is an option for them to move him to clear up room in the 40-man roster.
It's true.
And even if they can get back a fifth-round draft pick, or, you know, whatever.
You know,
right?
It's the I feel like he is in the Joe Panic kind of category.
Yeah.
Where, like, he could just be traded. We're not going to get a sexy name in return. It's going to be a bullpen arm, and then that bullpen arm may or may not turn into Simber or Richards or whoever, right?
Right.
But, like you said, almost just to make room on the 40-man roster, like...
I think we could see Reese move... for that exact reason. And he wouldn't be one of the guys that is included in a blockbuster that's going to bring a bunch back. But he is a guy who they may be able to get something for, whereas if you go back 1 year, they could get nothing for him, right? Exactly. In fact, 29 other teams passed on him. So Reese has done enough in 2021 to at least garner some consideration from a team that's like, you know what, lefty bat, we're not very good anyways, and we could use a backup catcher. He'll fit in nicely.
There's teams, like, look at the Brewers took Rowdy Tellez off our hands, right?
Yeah.
There's just a spot for a guy who, like you said, lefty bat, has shown potential, doesn't really have a spot on our team anymore, and, like, you know, I don't even remember what we got back for Tellez, but, you know. Best of luck with your new club, Reese.
Yeah. It was Trevor Richards. We got Trevor Richards.
Was it Trevor Richards? Okay, so that one worked. Yeah. I was worried it was going to be Brad Hand.
Yeah.
No.
And Bowden Francis, who's in AAA currently.
Bowden Francis. Okay, so that was a good trade.
Yeah, it was a good trade for both teams. And it was good to see Rowdy kind of have some success with the Brewers. Now, Danny Jansen is a guy that we could see move, but I would be shocked because this front office loves Danny Jansen, and so does this pitching staff. They have shown so much confidence in the guy, have given him so much rope. And at this point, to see Danny Jansen at 25 traded after what the time that they have put into developing him would really surprise me, especially after we saw Danny Jansen kind of come into his own in August and September. He looked really good, and he wound up ending the season far above average, which goes to show you the lack of solid catchers at the major league level. Because Danny Jansen finished above average in all the defensive categories, and I mean, both you and I were pulling our hair out in April, May, and June with this kid, just being like, why does he keep getting at bats? Like, but he showed a lot, man, in September, and I don't know how you feel about him. It's not like I'm like, yes, this is, it has to be Jansen that is our catcher going forward, but I'm no longer upset at the idea. I think that he has made some steps forward, and I think that he probably skews closer to what we saw at the end of the season than what we saw at the beginning. It's probably a happy medium somewhere in between. Where are you at on Jano at this point?
I'm going to shock you here.
Okay.
I was probably maybe one of the loudest critics of Danny Jansen through most of last season. I think 2022 is going to be a breakout season for Danny Jansen. I think he's going to be a top five offensive catcher.
Wow. I love that. I love that prediction. And this
mark it down, and if I'm wrong, I want to hear people freaking throwing this in my face. But I think he finished the year strong, and like you said, this front office has got so much invested in him. He's such a smart call behind the plate. I really think he's due for a big breakout next year. So,
which kind of lines up to what we're about to say next beautifully, because Alejandro Kirk is probably the most likely candidate to be traded in this catching position for the Toronto Blue Jays, and because he has the most value. He's 23 years old. He sprays the ball all over the field. He hits for power. Not a ton of it, but he hits the ball hard. His exit velocity is always impressive. He's a guy who's going to hit some doubles. Yes, his running is bad. You're never going to see him go first to third. He's not a guy who's going to leg out a triple. However, he has looked good behind the plate. I know his defensive side of things was his downfall when he was going into the 2021 season. I mean, he was 21, right? He just turned 23. Like in that 14 months since we were last evaluating Alejandro Kirk, he has improved substantially as a defensive catcher. And you look at his defensive metrics and he's pretty much average, which is, hey, at 23, you're only going to improve. I mean, we have talked to several catchers on this show. Greg Zahn stands out as a guy who is like, listen, I played 6 years in the pros before I felt like I could call a good game. It takes experience and it takes doing it to get to that level where you understand your pitchers, you understand the psychology behind calling a game with a guy. And Alejandro Kirk is making steps towards that every single day. And I think that there's a lot of teams out there that look at him and are like, you know what? In a league that is deficient in good catchers, this is a guy who could be an above average hitting offensive catcher and calls an average defensive game. Yeah. You can't ask for more.
Well, you could ask for Gabriel Moreno to pan out, but...
We'll get to that. So now we're going to go into the outfield. Obviously, it's a crowded outfield for the Toronto Blue Jays. Some of the candidates that we could see possibly move, depending on what trade for what. Randall Buchek, obviously, is a guy who could be moved. Randall doesn't have a ton of value because of his contract. So he is owed $20 million. I think it's $20.4 million over the next 2 years, so $10 million a year. Not a great contract, but also not an albatross of a contract by any means. It is still very movable. And if the Blue Jays are willing to eat a little of that, you know, if the Blue Jays eat $5 million of that and all of a sudden Randall Grichuk is costing a team $7 million a year, I think he has some real value for a team, especially a team that's not a contender currently. Maybe the Miami Marlins.
I was just going to say that, Scott. Miami Marlins feels like the perfect fit, where we send him down, we pay a good chunk of the contract, and then we get some young guys who they feel like they're going to lose to free agency soon anyways, because the Marlins don't pay
anyone. And the Miami Marlins also desperately in need of a catcher. So maybe there is something that could work there, sending an outfielder and Kirk that way and getting some starting pitching, which we are going to get into when we get into targets, because obviously the Jays do need to bolster their starting pitching, especially with Ray and Matz going to free agency. There are some holes that need to be filled. And the Miami Marlins are one of, like, maybe the only team out of the 30 MLB teams that have a ton of controllable starting pitching depth that has a high ceiling on it, you know, like for whatever reason, the Marlins have done a great job of developing starting pitchers and they have a deep crop to try and bolster the rest of their team. So we could see some Miami Marlins pitchers traded this offseason. And I know the Jays will be one of the teams targeting them. While we're talking about the outfield, we'll get to Lourdes. Now, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is probably the highest value trade chip that this Jays team has, in my opinion. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that his contract is beautiful. He's being paid $3 million a year over the next 2 years. He becomes a free agent in 2023. The guy has a cannon of an arm. He was a Gold Glove finalist out in left field. He is a streaky hitter, And this is one thing that has been his downfall, probably. And I know, Adam, you're one that has brought this up every time I get all excited about Lourdes. You're like, yes, but he's amazing when he's hot, but when he's cold, and it's true. And so we'll see where the Blue Jays fall on how they evaluate Lourdes, because I don't think that they're going to give him up unless they truly feel that it has been proven that no matter what happens, he is going to be that streaky guy, right? Where you're going to need to put up with his hot and his cold streaks.
Well, and this is where we got ourselves with Randall Grichuk, is Randall Grichuk got a contract because we were hoping, all right, this guy has shown signs that he can be the guy and be that hitter. Well, no, turns out he's 30 and he's a streaky guy. Right, so that is kind of,
and there's value in that, but there's frustration in that.
There isn't value in that on a World Series contender, right? So is it worth taking the risk on him? I guess. I mean, we'll see, right? Yeah. We'll see how the market shakes out. But that is kind of the blueprint, I think, for Lourdes Gurriel. Is there's on the one hand, maybe he turns into Teoscar, and then on the other hand, maybe he turns into Randall Grichuk. So those are, I think, of the two options.
That's a really good comparison, is Teoscar, because this team has
defensive
shown a
stud
lot of patience. Yeah. This team has shown a lot of patience with a lot of their guys. And I mean, we just talked about Danny Jansen, and you know, like, Teoscar's a perfect example of a guy that, you know, you show a little bit of patience to and it does work out. And we've got these guys in the Blue Jays history as well. I mean, look at Edwin Encarnacion, right? Like, double E, one of my favorite Blue Jays of all time. And the truth with that guy is that he was straight up DFA'd, right? Yes. Like, they put him on waivers, Oakland picked him up, and then needed to clear room on their 40 men, and the Jays got him back. Like, Edwin didn't break out until he was 29. Jose Bautista didn't break out till he was 28, and Lourdes Gurriel, sitting at 28, has shown the potential to be one of those guys. And I know we've talked about this before. If he is a trade chip, my biggest nightmare is trading him to Cleveland for Jose Ramirez and then watching their numbers be comparable the whole season, right? Like,
yes. Yes.
Last and not least on the list of guys, actually, we've got a couple more guys that could be traded. Kevin Biggio, super utility guy, obviously has some value, and it depends on what other organizations view him as. Do they view him as the incredibly disciplined at the plate guy that we saw in 2019 and 2020, or do they view him as the nightmare that was his 2021 season? Obviously, we've talked about Kevin lots and the fact that he went through a lot of injuries. We talked about the fact that he was playing a position he'd never played before in third base and wasn't comfortable at and looked uncomfortable at. I think his value is going to be dependent on the organization that is looking at him.
Yeah. I don't know. This is a tough one for me because I am a Biggio believer.
Yes.
But as much as I've flipped on Danny Jansen and I'm calling for Danny Jansen to have a breakout year next year, Kevin Biggio is in the hot seat.
Yes, he is.
2022 is going to be a make or break season if he's still with the Jays, and I hope he is. I hope he gets to play second base, and I hope that settles things down. I think it's really this train is rolling, and it's either get on, find a seat, or we're going to find someone else to do it.
I think you're right. I think this is it. I think if he's still a Jay at the start of 2022, I think this is a make or break year for him, and he may be on the trade block. We don't know. Another interesting little tidbit here, buddy, is Nate Pearson, because Nate Pearson 1 year ago was untouchable. He was the Blue Jays' number one prospect. This time last year, he was the Toronto Blue Jays' number one prospect and number 8 in all of baseball. And he has struggled with his control. And I know we sat down with Anthony Telford, former Montreal Expo, and his current off-season pitching coach, and I know he didn't work with Nate in the last year and a half over the pandemic. And one of Pearson's Achilles heels, according to Telford, is that he is incredibly into the analytics side of things and the biomechanics side of things, and he'll sit on the computer and judge exactly where his foot's landing and how his arm slot is. And Telford kind of said, you know what, spin rate, all this biomechanics stuff, all the analytics in the world are important, and obviously data is important, but if you can't locate, it's all garbage anyways. Who cares, right? Yep. So I think that Nate Pearson's another guy, very much like Biggio, where I think next year is going to be very telling as to where the Blue Jays feel his ceiling is. And he very well might be a guy who could be traded this season, or this offseason, I should say. He's a guy that's very much like Lourdes. It would be a haul coming back, I think. Like, I think we could see Grishik moved for to try and create some space financially. I think we could see a guy like Reese McGuire traded, try and clear up room on the 40-man, stuff like that. But I think if we see Lourdes or Nate moved, it is big, right? Whatever's coming back.
Yeah. No, I think you nailed it right on the head there. He's
so
in
we'll
that.
Get into the targets. Obviously, the Blue Jays are definitely going to be in need of, we touched on this, right, starting pitching. Pablo Lopez and Eliezer Hernandez are a couple of names with the Miami Marlins that seem to be popping up quite a bit. And again, Alejandro Kirk could be a guy going back. I mean, honestly, dude, if we can get Pablo Lopez, I would do that. I would trade Alejandro Kirk tomorrow. Like, some of these young controllable arms on this Marlins team, buddy, like, it is so impressive the stable of guys that they have managed to acquire. And we're not even talking Alcantaras. We're not talking like Sixto Sanchez. Like, and like, these are their bottom guys, and they would come in and be a number three guy on this Jays starting rotation. So, and a controllable arm, that's exciting stuff. And if you're going to trade a guy like Alejandro Kirk with a ton of control on his end, you would kind of want that being returned, right? So that's an interesting idea. The Cincinnati Reds are also shedding salary. I mean, we watched them trade their catcher Barnhart just the other week, which also means they've got a whole like catcher now, right? So that kind of lines up with the Blue Jays as well. Nick Castellanos opted to go to free agency, so they've got a hole in the outfield. So again, Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo, both under contract for two more years with the Reds, and the Reds are looking to shed salary. So maybe there is some sort of partnership with the Blue Jays that could work out well, where they could fill a hole in the outfield, fill their hole at catcher, and give up a Luis Castillo and still maybe compete. Because that was one thing the Reds, it's almost sad to see them need to strip down salary, because they were so competitive this last year. And I know that the last like 2 weeks of the season, they did kind of drop out of it, but man, they were right there almost the whole 162 games.
Yep.
We'll end on this.
Okay.
Okay. And we always appreciate all the viewership and the listeners. Thank you so much. We are going to end on Gabriel Moreno. The kid is, he's blowing everyone's mind, and this is a guy that we have talked about all season long, and Blue Jays fans are fairly familiar with him because he's been one of the top prospects since the beginning of last season. He's been talked about a lot, but man, he went into this Arizona Fall League, which is the majority of the Arizona Fall League is major leaguers and high-end prospects. So this is, he played in AA all year. He got a call up to AAA right at the end of the season there. But he is playing with the highest level of talent as his opposition that he's ever played with. And he is dominating. He is completely dominating this league. These are his numbers after 5 weeks in the Arizona Fall League. Okay. He's hitting .373, a .470 on base percentage, and just under a .600 slugging. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. has a .600 slugging, and Gabriel Moreno is slugging right now .593. It is absolutely insane what this kid is doing at 21 years old. He's looked good behind the plate, but even a little interesting caveat here, he is seeing quite a few reps at third base in the Arizona Fall League. Third base, of course, probably the biggest area of need for the Toronto Blue Jays currently. Could we see them make a splash? Go big in on a guy like Marcus Semien, bring back our boy, and then maybe see Moreno transition to third base and get a call up in early May? I don't know if this is the route that the front office would wish to take, but it is another option. And well, he is really pushing the Blue Jays' hand, and this is one thing that this front office has done. They did it with Manoah, right? They forced him to pitch his way into the lineup. Like, Manoah left them no choice. He was dominating so heavily at AAA, they were like, well, we got to call him up, even though this wasn't the plan. And I think Moreno's kind of doing the same thing.
Well, here's the thing with Moreno. And yes, I do just want to touch on the fact that Ross Atkins has said that his name does come up 3 or 4 times a day at these meetings. And just to comment on the Moreno at third base, again, Atkins says there's, quote, a very realistic chance that he plays third base moving forward, but they want to see what he looks like in the spring. So the advantage of him going to third, and I mean, especially given this almost guaranteed at this point, Danny Jansen MVP season that we're going to see in his breakout year next year. There isn't a logjam at catcher, but like we're also kind of good. Like as long as Danny Jansen continues to like be above average and good defensively, that's good enough, right? You can have nobody has a Von Rodriguez or you know like you don't have
Joe Mauer.
Yeah, that's what you get at catcher, right? You want a defensive guy who isn't killing you offensively. Third base, we have a big hole. If Moreno plays third base, he can be in our lineup 160 times a year. Nobody does that as catcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need days off as a catcher to let your body heal, rest, recover, whatever.
Yes.
So Gabriel Moreno as a unit at third base. I don't know. There's something to be excited about.
Another little thing to think of, too, is he was a natural shortstop. It was the Jays that transitioned him to catcher at 18 3 years ago. And the fact that, like you said, Danny Jansen has made some big steps forward, and it looks like he probably... The thing to remember about catcher is there's so much to it, mm-hmm. right? So, like, even if Gabriel Moreno comes up and he's pounding the ball, we're going to see him make mistakes behind the plate. There's nothing you can do about it. He's a 21-year-old kid. And we have watched how much Danny Jansen has progressed defensively. He is solid back there. He calls a good game. And this took 4 years for him to get here. So would we rather, and you make a really good point, would we rather see Moreno in the lineup almost 100% of the time? And, you know, could he be worse than Kevin Biggio at third base? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Biggio was, like, Biggio was bad.
Look, if Kevin Biggio was hitting 300 and slugging 900 and playing that way at third base, nobody complains.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that's what Moreno's going to do in his rookie season. But, I mean, one thing we've discussed this kind of... well, all of the last half of last season, is that Moreno might potentially be the price that we need to pay to bring Jose Ramirez in, who would be our third baseman. I think I'd rather have Moreno at third base for the next 7 years for basically for free.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's not going to cost...
maybe if the CBA gets amended.
Like, contract-wise, there's an advantage of having Moreno play third base for free when we're having to pay Vlad and Bo, you know, 3-4 years from now, right?
Yep.
I don't know. That's kind of a sexy idea. Gabby Moreno.
I really
at third
like
that
base. Idea, too.
I'm
and
starting
it's
to really get
some to see
some
him
heat
getting
on this.
Those reps at third and mm-hmm. to see that the front office with the Jays is kind of on that same wavelength, right?
And maybe that's just an indication of the confidence that they have in Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen. You know, maybe they're just like, look, we got two good guys. Let's not shake the bottle too much. Let's just get creative with our solutions. And we kind of mentioned this weeks ago, was that this offseason might be more creative than we expected, right? Yes. It's not just as simple as, okay, here's a third baseman. Okay, here's a pitcher. Here's a whatever, right? So, I don't know. Kevin Biggio at second, Gab Moreno at third base. Look at that infield. All of a sudden, I got goosebumps.
It's going to be so fun to see how this all plays out. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Did you have anything else to add here? Any little tidbits?
No, I think that Gabby stuff is a great note to end on. So,
okay, sounds good. Awesome. All right, everybody, you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts, at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter. You can follow us on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast, and TikTok, The Walk Off Podcast. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great day. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.